The next chapter, chapter 9, is called The Unconditioned and Non-Locality. With some comprehension of unsupported and unsupportive consciousness, as well as the quality of atamayata, which you'll probably recall means not made of thatness, we begin to say goodbye to the world of geography, since, just as there was no where, quote-unquote, for the sunlight to land in the Buddha's compelling simile, in that last chapter, the consciousness of Nibbana, although real, is best described as being unlocated. It's interesting to reflect that only what we call physical existence, i.e. rupakanda, is at all dependent on three-dimensional space. All the factors of the mental realm, the namakandas, are unlocated, quote-unquote. That is to say, the concepts of place and space do not, in any true sense, apply there. So you can't say the mind is anywhere. Awareness does not apply in the realm of the namakandas. Our thoughts and perceptions are so geared to operate in terms of three-dimensional space as the basic reality, and that view of things seems so obvious to common sense that it's hard for us to conceive of any other possibility. It's only through meditative insight that we can develop the uncommon sense required to see things differently. A couple of everyday examples might serve to lead us into the subject. Before going on to those, any thoughts or questions on that so far? Non-locality has... The word is used in various different ways in particle physics as well as in Buddha Dharma. Referring to that quality of conditioning that the mind has to think in terms of this place, that place, here and there, and the conditioning of the senses, and how in terms of ultimate reality, location, place, doesn't really apply. So that non-localities seem to be a good way to represent that. Okay, so the two examples. Firstly, the word cyberspace is used more and more frequently these days. One talks of, quote, visiting such and such a website, or my email address. But where are these? Abhayagiri Monastery has a website, but it does not exist anywhere. It has no geographical location. The words visit, home page, address, and such like are the easy jargon of Siberia, spelled C-Y-B-E-R-I-A. And we can be very comfortable using such terms, but the fact is that just like a thought, and indeed, the mind itself, although they exist, they cannot be said to truly be anywhere. Three-dimensional space does not apply in their context. A second example comes from a purportedly true incident. An American tourist in Oxford, England, approached a tweed-jacketed and bespectacled professorial type and said, "Excuse me, I wonder if you can tell me where exactly is the university?" Like London University, which I attended, there is no campus. There's separate colleges dotted all around Oxford, for Oxford University, or London, and in fact, 44 colleges dotted all around London. But there is no place which is London University. Similarly with Oxford, Cambridge, other universities that don't have a campus. So that's what this incident is based upon. So this bespectacled professorial type, probably with a pipe in his pocket. "Madam," the professorial type responded, "the university is not in reality anywhere. The university possesses only metaphysical rather than actual existence." That means the university, being comprised of separate independent colleges and not having a campus, is just a concept agreed upon by a number of humans to have some validity. It might have financial dealings, it might set exams and issue degrees, but physically, it does not exist. There are the different colleges that one might attend or visit, but, quote, the university, unquote, no. Like a website or a virtual garden in a computer program, or indeed, like a mythical country such as Erewhon. That was a Victorian novel. Erewhon is nowhere spelled backwards. The mythical country of Erewhon. All can be said to exist, but awareness does not apply. They are unlocated. As we cross the border into the realm of the unconditioned, if such a metaphor is valid, there needs to be a relinquishing of such habitual concepts as self and time and place. The apprehension of ultimate truth, the paramatta satya, necessarily involves a radical letting go of all these familiar structures. I found this a very fruitful area of reflection. A few readings ago, I was talking about that it was many, many years I was practicing meditation, been living as a Buddhist monk, before I even realized that the mind was so conditioned to that sense of locatedness, of here-ness. And it was in one of the early retreats at Abhayagiri, in the first 3 or 4 years that we were there, had very few visitors. It's quite remote. Mendocino County, where it's situated, has a very small human population, about 100,000 people in 3 million acres. The big town of Ukiah has a population of 50.
It has that many people.
Yeah, the biggest town in Mendocino County has 15,000 people. Berkhamsted has about 35 or 40,000. So that's the county.
It's called a village.
So Ukiah, and the next biggest town, Willits, is about 5,000 people. And about 2.5 hours drive, 3 hours drive north of San Francisco and Berkeley. Very few visitors. So the winter retreats were very rainy and very quiet. So there's a lot of time for solitary practice and extremely sort of still, quiet. Our winter retreat support team would be about 6 people, if that. Not that any of you are extra. This is a much bigger place. So it was very small, very quiet. About 3 weeks into the winter retreat this year, about the third or fourth year we were there, it'd be about 2000, 2001, there was a lot of opportunity for formal practice and my mind was very, very quiet. Everything was very quiet, very still. But I began to notice that even though there was the usual working to develop and cultivate the insights into anicca, dukkha, anatta, and all of that seemed to be quite clear and straightforward, there was this, somehow this stressing in the system. There was a feeling of burdenness or stressing or tension in the system. And I thought, what is this? Because looking at those feelings of I and me and mine, and it all seemed to be quite spacious and nothing sort of forming around an I, me or mine feeling, and no sort of habitual grasping or clinging around that. But there was definitely this kind of tightness, this tension, stressing in the system. And so this was really puzzling. I kind of looking at this for 3 or 4 days, like, this is kind of weird. Everything else is really quiet, really peaceful. What is this stress in the system? It doesn't seem to be any kind of a me here. Oh, here. There's a here. And it was like ding. I mean, not quite a sort of literal bell going off, but it was like, oh my goodness. You know, I've been a monk for, I don't know, 20 years or so by then. But it hadn't ever occurred to me, oh right, that sense of here-ness, a knower that's in a physical space with a front, back, up, down, that's a quality of grasping, that's a quality of clinging, attachment. Wow. So I simultaneously felt very stupid that I'd missed it. It never occurred to me in my mind to notice that. So I felt simultaneously relieved and very stupid. How could I have missed that? That became really like a rich area to explore, how strong and subtle that kind of conditioning was, that the sense of a, even if there's not any kind of definable me who's the experiencer, the experience is happening here. There's a locatedness. And so that is one of the themes of this chapter, that non-locality, the unlocated nature of Dhamma and the fundamental unlocated nature of mind and knowing. And just to read one more little bit, just to illustrate that, the stories of Lungtan Mahabua from his book called Straight from the Heart. Here is a present-day example, and to illustrate the centrality of such relinquishment is the insight which arose for Ajahn Mahabua in the period of intense practice immediately following Ajahn Mun's final passing away. It was this thought which he describes as having arisen on its own, and more that it was heard rather than thought, which led to Ajahn Mahabua's full enlightenment shortly thereafter. And this is Ajahn Tanisaro's translation in the book Straight from the Heart. If there is a point or a center of the knower anywhere, that is the essence of a level of being. If there is a point or a center of the knower anywhere, that is the essence of a level of being. So again, I'd read those words before, And then you read them, oh yeah, right. But it wasn't until that rainy, very quiet retreat time at the Bayagiri that that kind of principle really came alive and had profound meaning, and there was a felt sense of that. Any comments, thoughts on that domain, Ajahn?
It's beautiful to recollect that in reality. Just as in Ajahn Mahabhua's, because being or becoming is immediately gravitating to somewhere, something, somehow, someplace, something, some anything. Give me anything.
I don't know what the Pali for awareness would be, but it's probably the sort of thing I would ask Ajahn Vinitha. He'd go, search through his memory banks and his dictionaries, and he'd find a reference to it. So any questions, thoughts, comments? Yes?
One of the descriptions of the Dharma is here and now. So have you had an equivalent kind of insight into nouns as appearance?
Well, anicca is like, things are not really anicca because things are not really things. There isn't really anything that's changing. Just out of our conventions of speech and perception, we say, this book is changing, the cover is wearing out. The words are changing, the sounds are changing. But in terms of nounness or timelessness, the akaliko dhamma, we reflect on anicca, impermanence, and that reflection leads to the realization, oh, there isn't really anything that's ever born and dying, that ever really begins and ends. We just talk about the world of things in that way for the sake of communication and functioning in the conditioned realm. But there isn't really anything. In this sutra, there's a section later on in the sutra where it says, in this moment, there is no thing that comes to be. In this moment, there is no thing that ceases to be. Thus, in this moment, there is no birth and death to be brought to an end. Therefore, this moment is the absolute peace. And though it is just this moment, there is no limit to this moment. And herein is eternal delight. It's a great book. Simply taking a phrase like, in this moment, there is no thing that comes to be. Or like contemplating locationness or hereness. Just a word like, now. Or, where is here? Or just that little quotation, in this moment, there is no thing that comes to be. And then just letting the impact of those words have its own effect. And even if it's just for a moment, a second, then that rejigs the habits of perception, in this mind. So it creates a different baseline, again, if such language can apply, for experience. So that now is not just a very, very short period of time. It's referring to a whole different quality. Speaking of time, the hour has gone by, so let's call things to a close now.